It is 4:30 and you are tuned to KDNK. My name is Raleigh Burley and you are listening to Blue Smoke, the once in a while show that is all about the transformations that we can make in our daily lives, changing one thing to the other thing. And in this case, we're talking about mycology, the very interesting study of all things lichen and mushrooms and the great potential that they have to make those transformations for us, very literally transforming something dead and decomposing into new life. I'm joined by Matthew Rader, who is a self-taught mycologist and a local here in the Roaring Fork Valley. How are you, Matt?
I'm great. Thanks, Raleigh.
Thank you so much for being here today to talk about your art.
My pleasure.
Now, you are the founder of Toadstool Traditions. And what is the sort of mission of that organization?
The mission, I suppose, is to continue the tradition of fungal activity in the world, kind of facilitating what they've been doing all along in the background for bazillions of years. We don't even know how long. Once we get into the hundreds of thousands and millions of years, I think it's all guesswork. So for a long time, we'll say. But yeah, the tradition of mushrooms or toadstools or fungus in general, yeast included, they break down compounds and make them accessible to other creatures and biota and things of that nature, things in the environment.
I've read that like Western culture in particular, it's a very understudied subject. Whereas in other places, Asia in particular, there's been a high reverence for the medicinal qualities of fungi.
Yeah, Japan's at least a few thousand years in on fungal medicine. Reishi, turkey tail, lion's mane. Reishi probably is kind of the main first one, I think. Seems like it's got the longest history of use and reverence. I was in Peru about a year and a half ago, and it seems like there's plenty of spores blew in from Japan over to the Amazon, because there are reishi everywhere in the Amazon. So there's some similar cousins, Ganoderma aplanatum and Ganoderma tsuga, in the southeast of the United States as well. So reishi's all over. I'm sure Europe, Asia, obviously, is the king of.
So given how big this subject is,
yeah.
Maybe we start there. What are the qualities of reishi? Why is this a useful mushroom?
Well, traditionally, it's medicine for the emperor. It was a kind of a chi-boosting immune medicine, and it's still considered that. Definitely an immune-boosting. Science has confirmed that. But lately, we're getting a little bit more creative with how mushrooms can be used. Reishi in particular is interesting because the mycelium is harder than concrete. Maybe not tensile strength, but I think it's comparable. It's ridiculous. And I'm convinced there's potential. And I know there's people doing it already with packaging material, but I kind of want to see some walls built out of reishi.
Wow.
And that's definitely an accessible kind of business someone could get into that's not directly mycology. So you'd be working with a mycologist, but one could be building the construction material. You know, these are ideas that I could keep to myself, but there's so much potential that I can't do everything.
Yeah. So is that part of your business, Toadstool Traditions? You're not only looking at the medicinal effects,
sure,
but other applications?
Yeah, yeah. Once you're growing mushrooms, then the sky becomes the limit. As long as you're, for lack of a better word, generating seed, you can plant a forest. So that's kind of the concept I have. It'll probably be a few steps to getting to the construction material mycology and maybe the remediation of chemicals and biological contamination side of microbiology and mycology. Those are group efforts. Those are bigger. Uh-huh. So right now it's just me and a couple of helpers. So we're just going to grow some food to start out, and eventually we'll get to the construction of mushroom houses and acres and acres of bioremediation via mushroom.
And so you currently are cultivating reishi?
At the very instant, no, but that is next on the list. By the end of the month, I've been transitioning back to a new place, or back into town, into a new place. And this winter's work will mostly be lion's mane, reishi, and cordyceps. I'll probably experiment with a few other things, but those are what I'm going to try to develop. The lion's manes for the tincture, that Toadstool Traditions is a main product, is a lion's mane extract. So got to keep those going. And then the reishi will take 4 months plus to mature. So that's kind of a back burner project as well. And then the cordyceps take less time, but I haven't done it yet. So there'll be a little bit of tweaking to get that into production.
So there's all kinds of rumors around the cultivation of mushrooms. Do you have to use cow manure to cultivate these reishi?
No, you don't have to. That'd be interesting. You could probably sneak some in there, but they're more of a primary decomposer, so they're into the wood. They want lignin and cellulose. They're trying to break down the... They're like kind of first attack breakdown of the forest. They're one of the main keepers in the degradation of the forest and breaking down trees into topsoil.
Wow. Well, I'm speaking to Matthew Rader, who is the founder of Toadstool Traditions and a self-taught mycologist living in the Roaring Fork Valley. So what got you into cultivating mushrooms or studying mushrooms, moving towards, you mentioned, remediation?
Yeah. Food probably was what really got me interested. And sparked a desire to really inform myself on what I'm putting into my body and how it's grown. So I guess about 10 years ago, I started volunteering, or not volunteering, just shy of volunteering, just kind of stipend, working apprenticeships on farms, and learned a lot. And let's see, 2012 in Eagle Springs Organic down in Silt, kind of got a mushroom project dropped in my lap. I was the most enthusiastic one at the time, so I spent the whole winter with my nose in the books and with a couple $1,000s of equipment and just getting into it, practicing, doing it myself. And I like growing mushrooms for food, but I'm not really stoked on the idea of just creating this behemoth food factory that with all its waste and electrical usage. I'm trying to be realistic in my usage and kind of my pro-noia of waste. It's kind of a fine line because mushrooms do have a capacity to break down most waste. There's a second now mushroom that they found that breaks down plastic, ethylene. So it's kind of an ironic that in the future, we'll probably be using plastic bags to grow this plastic-eating mushroom. But in the meantime, I'm just trying to reduce my output of waste and see how much I can grow outside. And with that, it would be an easy transition from growing mushroom food outside seasonally to remediative projects that are strictly outside and on a larger scale.
So in the case of those mushrooms that break down plastic, what... then are they used for something, or do they then decompose organically and the plastics disappeared? How does that process
pretty
work?
Pretty much. They're pretty stingy with the data. So it's been a challenge to get my hands on a strain of that. And I don't know if I've just heard rumors of amateurs having it. I haven't really met one. I haven't met anybody that actually has it. But I have heard that a very large greenhouse of carpet was turned into topsoil in way less than a year. And that fits within their role in the forest. They're the decomposers. They're the molecular disassemblers. So we'll take hydrocarbon, let's say motor oil, hydrogen and carbon combined, innocent molecules on their own, but combined, they're kind of damaging in when they're out of balance or maybe out of concentration in the environment. So the mushrooms can break the hydrogen and the carbon into base hydrogen and carbon, and then the biota in the soil and the plants can uptake those simplified molecules. So your question about the plastic, in theory, again, the information is a little on the hush-hush from the folks who are studying this, but it seems like they would just break it down to base molecules and it would no longer be plastic.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
And so I've also encountered a mushroom, and this actually came up on Express Yourself, I think two Fridays ago, but a mushroom that turns itself into a black ink and can be used for drawing.
Yeah. Caprinus comatus. Yeah, very common compost mushroom. They volunteer. They're one of the very, very first ones. Super aggressive. There's a variety of them. You might want to get a couple books and corroborate your identifications before you were to eat one.
Right.
Because there's a few that do that inky thing.
That particular one, shaggy mane, is like a common name for it.
Yeah, they're delicious.
And poisonous if you've drank alcohol, from what I've heard.
So yes. They can make your liver hypersensitive to the alcohol metabolization, and you can get sick.
So there's so many diverse forms, colors, and applications of mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like we have only begun to discover all the varieties that exist?
Yeah, definitely. And statistically, mycology is less than 100 years old. It's the youngest macro science that exists. And every day, biologists in a variety of disciplines are finding how interconnected and how dependent most organisms are on fungi. Endomycorrhizae and ectomycorrhizae. These are fungal filaments that are found in pretty much everywhere they've looked. In leaves, in the cells, and in between the cells of leaves. They're in and among the cells of most plant roots. Turns out most of the soil is decaying fungus matter, or at least matter that has been acted upon by fungus in some form or fashion. Even the dead and dying hyphae, that's kind of this cellular cobweb-like structure in the soil, is burrowing kind of channels into the soil and helping aerate. And then when it dies, it becomes an avenue for bacteria to kind of grow and eat that fungus material and further break down. It's just this chain of life that's predominantly kind of initiated by fungal breakdown.
I've heard even that mycelial networks are a form of communication for the forest.
That as completely wild as that sounds, this has been also corroborated by a variety of studies, even to the degree where the larger trees are giving smaller sapling trees of the same species nutrition in order to boost their kind of sequencing of generation. Say a spruce can give phosphorus or magnesium, for example, to a sapling. Could probably even give it water if it needs, because it's in the shade. It's kind of in the understory. It'll help its species propagate.
How does that work through mushrooms?
So the hyphae, the cobweb-like structure, the main organism of the fungi, the mushroom is the end of the life cycle. That's kind of like an apple to an apple tree. So that's a means of spreading genetic material. The main action is in the mycelium, in this cobweb-like structure under the soil. They are microfilaments, for lack of a better word, that are a two-way street. They can uptake nutrition. They can also exude metabolite enzymes. So it's kind of like a digestive tract of a human, except it's externalized. Similar acids and kind of solvent-type enzymes are excreted externally dissolve whatever it touches, and then the mushroom hyphae kind of grow into that space and absorb whatever they can. And now with this kind of plant awareness that we have, just kind of the studies and the undeniable reports of plants responding to people's actions and presence and thoughts. Similar thing with the fungi. They are in communication with the plants physically, and it's kind of a trade-off. The mushrooms or the fungus is trading these nutrients to the tree, and it's getting sugar from the photosynthesis of the tree. So it's a little team effort. And since it's a two-way street, these networks of mycelium can move everything and anything in whichever direction is needed in the ecosystem, in the community of plants.
You're listening to Katie and Kay. This is Raleigh Burley with the show Blue Smoke, and we are speaking to Matthew Rader, the founder of Toadstool Traditions and a self-taught mycologist in the Roaring Fork Valley. And Matthew, you're also hosting a talk tomorrow at Wyatt's Apothecary at 6 p.m.
Yeah, we're tomorrow kick off a series called Wyatt Speaks at 6 p.m. at Wyatt's Apothecary on Main Street in Carbondale, Colorado. This week I will be talking about mushrooms, as usual. And then next week will be Jeremy Morris, the owner, operator of Wyatt's Apothecary. We'll talk about CBD. And we're going to flip-flop weekly. I'll follow him next the following week in mushrooms, and he'll follow me the last week in on CBDs. So 6 p.m., come on down, get some free chaga tea, learn about mushrooms and why you should be eating and drinking them.
And one of the products that you have at Wyatt's Apothecary is this lion's mane tincture, which you mentioned earlier. You've done a lot of work with lion's mane. What do you recommend that for?
Well, for a variety of things. My main appeal was the mental capacity, the cellular regeneration. Dementia, unfortunately, runs in my family. My last living grandparent, my grandma, no longer recognizes her own children. So I'm just very interested in preventing that. It seems like it's an environmental assisted illness. There's definitely genetic predisposition, but I think if we are eating well and not allowing these genetic predispositions to express themselves through food, supplements, and things of that nature, exercise, clean water, then we can prevent these things and the disaster of mental degradation. So the lion's mane is acting on the myelin sheath predominantly. I shouldn't say predominantly. Large effect is the myelin sheath, which is kind of in amongst the dendrites and axons of the brain. So it's a neuroprotectant. It's preventing your existing neurons from oxidation, and it's all in, therefore it's helping them grow. Since they're not being degraded while they're growing, they're kind of like shielded, and they can grow a little bit more effectively. And the way it seems is the amyloid plaque, kind of the cause of dementia, is in that area of the intercellular space where the myelin sheath dwells, and that's kind of its general mode of function as far as protecting your brain from Alzheimer's and nervous system issues as well.
Do you yourself take it? You mentioned by protecting your neurons or these connections that it actually allows it to grow more.
Yeah, it's increasing the density of your neural fabric, and therefore it's easier to access memories. It's easier to kind of stay on point through conversation, and kind of keeps you going, keeps you young, keeps your mind sharp, And not to mention a variety of other things. Let's see, IBS. That's kind of its first health exposure was traditional Chinese medicine, was for bowel illnesses. But that's kind of my main thing is the nervous system and the memory thing. When I first started taking it, I started having memories from childhood and songs I haven't heard in 12 years just pop into my head. So I've got at least a couple folks in their 90s taking it, and either they notice it or their family notices a difference. So it's never too late to start protecting your brain.
And you mentioned chaga tea is something that you'll have at Wyatt's Apothecary during your talk tomorrow at 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
What is chaga?
Chaga. Some refer to it as a parasite of the birch tree in the Northeast and Canada. But it's a tremendous immune booster, kind of chi energizer. Tastes great. Extremely mild flavor. I like to make it big batches of tea and use that to cook rice. And just any way to get it into my diet. And then you can brew green tea or whatever else you're drinking into this because it's such a background flavor. But unfortunately, the cultivated versions of that are not as potent as the wild foraged ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I will have wild foraged chaga tea available tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah.
So have you been out foraging this season?
Very little. I've been out of town, and now it's only just now kind of this week is mushroom season here. So I have no longer have an excuse. This week will be the week I'll get out there.
Will the snow affect the mushroom bodies?
Not this early. I would say yes and no. The ground's still warm. The snow's not going to freeze the ground yet. The mushrooms are still under there doing their thing, and they still want to spread their spores. So it's probably the very, very tail end of foraging season, but it's still relatively warm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Great. And do you have your favorite mushrooms to forage in this area?
Not so much. I have to confess I haven't foraged that much around here. Our foraging season's pretty short, A, and then B, mostly I've just been indoors learning how to cultivate for the past 7 years. So I just haven't prioritized the identification of wild mushrooms.
Do you have a wish list for, different strains that you want to cultivate in the future?
Yeah, I mean, new interesting stuff. I mean, I'm sure there's species that I'm excited to grow that I am not even aware of yet. As my kind of evolution in the mycology world evolves, my priorities will kind of evolve as well. So who knows, there might be a local Colorado strain of mushroom that's stronger than a reishi that would be better to build a house out of, for example. But I do want to say this, since mycology is so young and there is such a large forest out there, we need people to get interested and activated. Some of the most medicinal mushrooms in the world are less than an inch tall, and we need people out there looking for them. And if anybody finds anything super interesting, I don't want a million calls on everybody's mushroom finds because I'm not that adept at identifying mushrooms, but I would like to encourage folks that are somewhat informed on mushroom identification. If they do find something unusual or interesting, I would like to hear about that because I could potentially get it going and we could get that cultivating.
And could people contact you through a website?
Yes, I've got toadstooltraditions.com and also toadstooltraditions1@gmail.com. That's my email.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you so much, Matt Rader. We're about out of time. I'd like to remind folks that Matthew Rader will be at Wyatt's Apothecary tomorrow at 6 p.m. giving a talk on mushrooms, answering questions, I imagine. Is there anything else that you'd like to add in our final moments?
Stay hydrated. Consider a CBD immune booster with some additional mushroom immune booster. Stay on top of flu season and it won't even be a concern.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Matt Rader. This has been another episode of Blue Smoke. Thank you to everybody who has tuned in.